This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Hello, Susie Rong.
Hello, Warren. Time for another personal question of the week. Have you ever fallen for someone who's just so, so wrong for you?
Oh. How long have you got, Susie?
Is that your entire love history?
Yes, basically. Oh, Susie, that's a funny question because I don't know about you, but I was kind of when you go through life and you have that, you're told you're wrong and you're faulty and all that sort of thing. And I had this low self-esteem. I'd take anyone, anything that moved and said, hey, I'm interested. And without sort of assessing, hey, is this the right person? And as a result, lots of failed wrong relationships. So yes, I've had heaps of them, but I'm not blaming them. I'm not blaming them. In some ways, I blame myself for not being, not doing my due diligence as such, not feeling good about myself and thinking I should be lucky that someone was interested, as opposed to, no, I'm worth having a good, healthy, loving relationship and I'm worthy of being loved. What about you?
So are you saying if you haven't got a good sense of yourself, getting into a relationship is just really a bad idea?
I think, I don't know, this is just my experience. I'm not qualified to comment generally, but I would say that for me, if you're in a spot where you think, I'm not worthy of love, and that's not your own fault. That's the way that we are portrayed. It's the way the pressure that society puts on us, what we're told subliminally, just constant messages from people, whether it be the way we perform at sport, friends at school, peer group pressure, you know what it's like. Then I found that it made me susceptible to accepting love from the wrong places and the wrong people.
But do you think that going through these probably more negative than positive relationships was how you learned to be a better person for yourself and hence learn in these processes to become a better partner or learn to find a better partner?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it teaches you a lot. I mean, you can get really nasty relationships out there when you get in them for the wrong reasons. And I certainly have been in horrible relationships and I haven't been the best partner either. I'm not putting a halo over my head. We all make mistakes and, a lot of us come from parents where we didn't necessarily observe good relationships. And, and if you come from that sort of English, British background like I do, showing affection and hugs is not common. And in fact, it's, frowned upon. Certainly was in my family. Like, why are you doing that? Why are you hugging your uncles? Like,
so how did you learn to break that?
I learned through, I suppose, my own experimentation and feeling uncomfortable with it and thinking, oh, actually, it's really nice to hug someone, to love someone and to receive love. It's such a nice thing to do, but it's certainly really uncomfortable at first because I'm not used to it. It's never been modeled for me. I think.
Interesting.
What about you?
I think I asked the right question
you
today.
You did. I never, and I have to say, Susie, to everyone, like Joy Drive family, I don't know what Susie's going to talk about. We don't talk. We just say, hello, how are you? What have you been up to? We don't talk about anything that we're going to talk about on air. So I'm thrown in the deep end here.
I'm always springing you with deep questions.
Susie, but I want to know about you. What about you?
Well, when I was younger, I felt like my memory of this particular topic was that I would fall very quickly at the drop of a condom, as some might say, with men that were completely unavailable, and I wouldn't be able to see it. Like they would be interested in, like a quick shag or just like a short term fling, but I would very quickly romanticize everything and want to lock everything down right away. And it took me a long time to observe or to understand that dynamic that was happening. I think part of it was cultural as well, which you know, it corresponds with what you were saying about being from a kind of an English type background. Mm. I think when I first came to this country, I was surprised at how cold the people could be, that cold. You could have shared a passionate night. And then suddenly you're like less than just friends. It was really weird to me. And I didn't understand that. So I think I relate to this idea of falling for the wrong person in terms of not being able to read the situation very well, that, you know, that the person actually doesn't want to be very deep in a relationship with me. And it took me a long time to understand that there were men like that.
Susie, have you, when you talk about, you know, the passionate night as such, have you had that experience? I know I have, where you have a really good night together and then you can see the programming that's been put in their brain short-circuiting and the guilt happening and all this, and then they go really cold and push you away because of the reality of what they've just done has just sunk in, and they're trying to reconcile it with all the, whether it be their beliefs or their family pressure or expectations or whatever. Do you see that, the short-circuiting that happens?
Well, these days I'm very kind of careful. I'm very clear before anything happens that we kind of spell out what things are going to be like after the hookup, you know. It used to be that I would imagine this huge love story that was going to unfold. So it takes a couple of decades, but you kind of grow up and you adapt and you change. And that question comes directly from today's movie.
What are we talking about? We're talking about a movie. It's called Lesbian Space Princess. Tell us about it.
When we meet Princess Syra of the planet Clitopolis at the start of the movie, she's a nice enough girl, although her lack of a backbone is quite evident. Fair enough, as someone spoiled from birth with more than she would ever need, why would Princess Syra develop any courage or indeed strength of character? This all changes when her ex-girlfriend is captured by straight white malians across the galaxy, and she has to break out of her literal gay bubble for the first time and be a woman. The animated feature Lesbian Space Princess, available to rent at your favorite digital platforms, is a delightful 90-minute Australian film about empowerment, but in a more modern, inclusive way. The story is told with great humor, quite clever in the way it structures a plot with little vilifying of anyone. The subtext is that you don't have to think less of others in order to have healthy self-esteem. Obviously, the three straight white malians are the bad guys, but without spoiling things too much, they too have redeeming features. The voice acting in Lesbian Space Princess is truly marvelous. I usually find animations to be uninvolving because without human faces, I tend not to understand emotions very well. But here I'm able to follow all the nuances perfectly. Whether the comedy is obvious or subtle, I'm thankfully not missing a beat, and in fact had several big laughs, which I must say took me by surprise. The artwork is also really charming, telling the story in every frame with extraordinary inventiveness and hilarious quirkiness. The effortless combination of whimsy and moxie gives Lesbian Space Princess's distinctive feminist flavor and makes its lovely moral about self-possession an inspiring one, never feeling preachy at any moment. It's won quite a few awards all over the world at film festivals from Germany to Mexico, and it's easy to understand why. It's not for kids, but it will connect with your inner child and likely broaden your horizons. Warren, I hope you found this a pleasant surprise.
I did find it a pleasant surprise. I didn't realize it was going to be an animation, and I sat down last night and I thought, oh, this is really good, because I feel like, you know, you can just relax and enjoy an animated film. I like the idea, Susie, of a literal bubble protecting the planet. I mean, that really stuck with me. It feels like such a clear metaphor for the spaces we build to feel safe, you know, whether it be venues, friends groups, chosen family, places where we can finally exhale. I love the idea that it was this camp thing protecting the planet wrapped around. Oh, okay, you can go through. I thought that was great. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's a bit like the complacency that you settle into, and then you forget that it's a dangerous world out there until Kiki, her ex-girlfriend, who she's so desperately in love with for the wrong reasons, gets captured, and she has to face her fears and grow up and be a woman and save the day.
But that bubble, I mean, it keeps, you safe, but it also keeps things out. And it made me think about how comfort can quietly turn into a kind of emotional insulation. You know, it's safe, but it's limiting. And, you know, we don't, there's moments where staying inside, for example, a queer-only spaces can feel nurturing at first, but eventually a little bit claustrophobic, not because those spaces are wrong, but because we grow and change. And if we don't necessarily face the fears and what's out there, we don't necessarily grow.
How often do you feel like you're, how much of your life you feel is in that bubble?
I feel like a lot of it has been in that bubble, but I feel like now, you know, I don't necessarily rely on it so much, but there certainly is, there's a safety and complacency, isn't there, when such, you know, parts of the world can be so hostile towards smaller groups. And but I feel like now, you know, perhaps in more in my teenage years, my 20s, I really was in that safe bubble and I didn't want to get out of it. You know, and with that bubble came a sense of belonging as well. But now I feel like it's, you know, being on radio, I suppose, you can't really just hide within a bubble. You've got to confront what's out there and see what's out there.
Yeah, I remember that bubble when I was, before I transitioned, and I was kind of dating men and had gay sort of close friends. Mm. It was a very secure, it felt like a really comforting bubble. But then I transitioned, and then there's a part of you, when I transitioned, it became a straight person for a while. The caveat here is for a while, the initial years, you kind of feel like, oh, I'm suddenly like in a different space. And it is that breaking out of the bubble, because the gay bubble is not very welcoming to trans people. I mean, you know, we do have a queer community, but that gay bubble that you're talking about can be very insular and can be very, very, very closed up. Mm. And I certainly didn't feel comfortable transitioning within that bubble. So I had to leave that bubble for a bit and venture into what felt like a much bigger world. It felt like so huge. And it was in a way thrilling, but also it was full of uncertainty. I didn't understand it. And I thought I had to navigate it like a straight woman at times, because that's how they understood me, observing me, I think. And then it took a long time to kind of find my new, a new sort of queerness after transitioning.
So do you think the message, therefore, of the protective bubble, and we're talking metaphorically about the movie Lesbian Space Princess with Susie Wrong, do you think, therefore, it explores belonging within the bubble, feeling safe within the bubble, but without potentially losing yourself? So the idea that community is there to protect you, but not to trap you, to still let you explore and become yourself. Is that really what happened in your case?
Yeah, I think I discovered how it was limiting. You do kind of, I look back and I think that it felt a bit like a hamster wheel a little bit, like you're just repeating the patterns a little bit. I don't know if it's you know, necessarily a bad thing. I remember feeling I felt a sense of belonging and comfort. But now, like, having left that bubble, I feel like it was limiting, and that I was capable of more, and there was so much to experience and see when you kind of, you know, and that bubble is really in the head, you know what I mean? It's like you have to let go of what you think your limitations are, what you think you like, what you think the places you like, the people you like, what those things look like. And then in my case, I was thrust into a new bigger world and had to figure things out in quite a scary way, but ultimately rewarding.
Susie, I love the name of the planet. I've forgotten what it was now, but it was very funny.
Clitopolis.
That was funny. I really enjoyed it. I liked watching it. It was lighthearted. It was good. It was great to see. You can catch it now if you want. Susie Wrong, what are we talking about next week? I'm scared of the question next week.
I think next week's question is going to be great.
Okay.
Next week, Ryan Murphy's latest series, The Beauty, is coming to Disney Plus on Thursday, a sci-fi about a sexually transmitted virus that makes people incredibly attractive, but that conceals lethal side effects. Catch the first three episodes of The Beauty before I see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.